Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Good morning, folks. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to talk about this special session, kind of a weird happenstance, right? We're going to increase taxes in order to decrease taxes. We'll talk to Clancy Dubose, political editor and columnist for Gambit and WWL, Louisiana political analyst. We'll talk about the political side of that, what this means, where are we going? Will the governor be able to regroup his supporters in the House and in the Senate to ultimately pass this legislation? In the beginning of the 12 o'clock hour, we'll talk to Jan Moeller, Invest in Louisiana. He's looking at this from a numbers game, and we'll find out from Jan what he's thinking. Recently, the NOPD's adopted new executive protection policies. We'll find out more about that. We'll visit with Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola and former NOPD chief. And we'll try to gain a better understanding of what we expect and what we hope to see in the protocols there to try and make sure and ensure that we don't face the same debacle that we're facing with this current mayor, who now's in Rio, I believe, was somewhere else before that, learning about climate change. We can't fill potholes, but we're focused on climate change. It's going to be interesting. I don't know where this is going to go, and I can't wait to get a summation of all of the expenses of this office as she flies around the world in the waning days of her term of office. If, you know, next year ought to be real interesting as we get closer to the deadline. NOLA Coalition Show with Leroy Brown from Opportunity Hub, otherwise known as OHUB. It's an ecosystem development. We'll talk about that. He's the lead of that organization. We are going to talk about a few things, and then we'll go to the talk lines today. And if you notice, we're trying to do this more and more. I've been getting a lot of texts from folks saying we really want to be able to call into your show and say what we want to say about certain things, get it off our chests. And I like that, actually. And, you know, a lot of times I'm at kind of a tough hour between 10 and 1, right? A lot of folks have already left their automobile as they go to work. You know, things kind of pick up around lunchtime, but I mean, it's not as conducive as morning drive and afternoon drive for folks to call in. But we've had good response and good response on the text line. And don't be afraid to call in and get on. It's okay. We love to hear your opinion. So the other day I was talking about this debacle with the school system. Right. And this issue that even today, November the 19th, this all started back in September. We still don't have a clear understanding as to what happened. How could they miss the mark by $36 million, which has had a detrimental effect to the operations of the school system, whether it's the charter school or otherwise? And they don't necessarily really know what the remediation is. And then the city steps in and decides, well, this is a perfect opportunity for us to settle a lawsuit, one that we cannot win, one that I indicated to a number of council members way back when that think tank LaToya Cantrell decided that this was going to be a good idea to charge an administrative fee on propositions that were voted on by the public. She was going to get her fair share, take it off the top, and that was going to be an official okie-dokie by the administration. Not so fast. Doesn't really work that way. Well, it was tested in court. The Downtown Development District tested it, and the city lost. So a lot of people were wondering, why would the city step up and hurry up and settle this at this opportunity? Well, because it makes a difference to the school system. They're upside down financially. That doesn't improve the efficiency and the competency of the school system. It just buys some time by giving them some money that they're going to probably otherwise get by virtue of a settlement because the city was wrong, plain and simple. So I guess maybe we should send some kudos to the city and putting this on the fast track and trying to avert a disaster. over at the school system. It would have been a lot nicer had we averted this disaster by actually doing what we were hired to do and taking the extra time and the due diligence to gain a better understanding of how the revenue side of this operation works, how we account for same, what relevant reports that we should be looking at on a monthly basis, visiting with the assessor as well as the finance department of the city, so that we are able to get our hands around what our budgetary process should look like, so we don't miss the mark and we don't create expectations of others who are spending dollars thinking they're getting X and they're getting X minus a sum of money. It's a horrible process, the way that this worked out. And the worst part about it is the folks that are suffering the most, again, as always, and we shouldn't be surprised by this, are the children of our community. Our children of our community. And I know I'm going to start getting texts. Well, you don't live in New Orleans. No. I spend a lot of money in New Orleans. The place of business where I work is in New Orleans. I care about New Orleans. Everyone should care about New Orleans. And everyone should care about the competency rate, of the people that we put in these positions of authority to run these all too important organizations, and they just simply resign and they move on. And it's amazing how this collective group of incompetent people, they're like cats with nine lives. They get jobs somewhere else. I promise you, there's going to be some Democrat-controlled organization that's actually going to hire LaToya Cantrell, if you can believe that, who doesn't have a clue what's going on in her city from a financial perspective. She's never really gone to the mic and articulated a competency as it relates to the finances of the city. So we're pointing fingers now. Meanwhile, the city steps in. They're going to pay $10 million, I think, before the end of this year, and another $10 million by April 1st. And they're going to fund some programs, in order, some of the programs that they were interested in, good programs. I mean, I don't have, these are worthy programs. One for sure is Thrive Kids, which is mental health professionals provided for by Children's Hospital in partnership with them. That's a huge upside for these campuses, a jumpstart program, and that will continue funding. And then the money that they get for educational purposes to fund programs for students and others are going to go to the school district as well from the casino, about another $2 million, and then another $1 million for vocational training, such as Youth Force NOLA. We've had them on this show. A lot of these organizations we've actually had on the show, and they're very worthy, right? But it's absolutely amazing that it has to take a screw-up to get everybody together, put this on the fast track, because as each day goes by when we're not adequately funding, a lot of what's going on here is a day lost. There's no exigency. It's just absolutely amazing to me. And what's equally amazing to me is how these exotic financing schemes, that we created to try and cover our shortages. And you've heard me talk about this a lot, about prioritization. And they're all guilty. The administration is guilty and the city council is guilty of this, because we're spending dollars on programs as though we have excess capital. So the reason the city got themselves into this problem here was several years ago, the school district claimed that the city began withholding a portion of their tax revenue to pay pensions. Back in 2007, they started this practice, amounting to $7.6 million between 2012 and 2017. And this was to help pay the pay down the pensions, the pension debt out there. Again, an exotic financing scheme, right? So they thought they would take money from an otherwise independent tax recipient body to cover their pension obligations that they've been behind the eight ball on for years. And by the way, that pension obligation is still there. They're still behind the eight ball. There's no plan to get them caught up. Meanwhile, members of some of these pensions are going to the state legislature, not letting anybody know, and trying to increase their benefits for their members while the whole pension fund is still upside down. This ought to be a reality TV show. You can't make this up. That strategically, we do not have a plan. And there has been no plan until one party compelled the other party to go into court. These are your employees. These are your obligations. If you don't like it, change it. But nobody wants to expend the political capital to do that. We're chameleons. We want to be all things to all people. And meanwhile, while we're being all things to all people, we're giving out money hand over fist to everybody out there in the community as though we have no legacy cost expenditures that are breaking our back. And it's why we have beggar budgets, where we're begging federal and state authorities to give us more money, plain and simple. And it's absolutely ridiculous. And this goes, it's not this council necessarily. This goes back several councils that we decided to go down this path. And, you know, and it's not necessarily the Cantrell administration. It goes back to the Landrieu administration, the Nagin administration, as well as the Morial administration before that. Because we just keep kicking the can down the road. And it's absolutely ridiculous. And at some point in time, we need to figure out exactly what is owed, exactly what comes in, what is a luxury item, what is a luxury expenditure that we get little or no ROI other than we feel good about it, and start putting all of these collective dollars together in order to get us out of the financial predicament that we find ourselves in. And stop trying to be all things to all people, because we will never catch up. And there's going to be no better time than in the next mayoral election is to demand of these candidates to explain where they are going to be. You have to wonder, right now we have a big fight between the legislative auditor and one of the homeless programs that don't want to give certain pieces of information, demographic information, so that the auditor can do an appropriate audit to see whether or not how many times people are coming in and out of the system and how much money we're spending on them and when is enough enough. And sometimes you just have to say no. And obviously some of these groups, they don't like to say no. The city doesn't, for sure. And we keep funding and funding and financing and financing, and we're not making credible gains as it relates to outcomes, something else that everyone tries to avoid, is to have documented outcomes to see whether or not this is worthy of our investment. Or should we look at ourselves critically in the mirror and maybe change this? Maybe we should try something differently. Maybe we should see where we can better place our money strategically in order to accomplish the outcomes that we're looking for. Hell, that was part of this whole issue with the election of Donald Trump in this most recent election. The frustration of the public relative to these same issues, these prioritizations. We're running around spending billions and billions and billions of dollars to implement DEI policies that more than half of the country cannot stand. Forcing people to watch videos about their white privilege that come from homes and come from areas of the country that are every bit as poor as anybody or any person of color or any other representative ethnic group. You know what their response was. Give me a break already. But it's a classic example of not focusing on the blocking and tackling of governance and government and what it is that the constituencies across this country are looking for from their political elected leaders. Plain and simple. And we need to wake up. And we need to make sure that we put people in positions not because of the ethnic group that they represent, the race that they represent, the gender that they represent. It should be the competency level of the individual. Can they do the frickin' job day in and day out? And can they do it with the level of competency that we're actually, once they leave at a better place than the way they inherited it? And if those people don't have those qualities or characteristics to do so, we should not hire those people in these positions. It's amazing that as soon as this is uncovered, what happens? The CFO leaves first because the CFO knows exactly where that mistake was made. Obviously, doesn't want to make that admission, doesn't want to have his name in the papers, doesn't want to be reported in the news, and certainly doesn't want to be talked about on this show. So that individual is hasta la vista, baby. And then that individual leaves this pile of you-know-what with the person who's ultimately responsible, the CEO of this organization. And guess what she does? She leaves. No desire to sit there and defend this. No desire to get reported in the paper. No desire to be reported on TV, radio, or otherwise. And doesn't want to create a lot of clicks on the internet, thereby diminishing her ability to go out and get a similar job, God forbid, at another educational institution somewhere. And let's hope and pray that they don't put her in charge of finances. Because they leave, no exit interview that we are aware of, no exit explanation of what happened, why this happened. And we're sitting here months later, and we still have not revealed to the public how we made a $36 million mistake. And I guess the pressure's off now that the city, thankfully, resolves a lawsuit, comes in with $20 million, and I guess they all believe that this is all going to go away. Because I think what's interesting is, and I would have never said this, right? But Katie Beaudoin, the president of the Orleans Parish School Board, thanked the city for their cooperation and said the timing of the settlement was no accident. The city council has been motivated to help the school board and New Orleans Public Schools get through our financial challenges right now, and we are very grateful to them. They also know that New Orleans requires a strong public education system. Whew. That's earth-shattering. And this agreement will ensure that our schools get the tax revenue that they're entitled to from now on. But Katie, you missed the threshold question. Can you be trusted with these dollars? I would have loved to have seen part of this settlement that outlined some accountability measures, some oversight measures, especially relative to all these programs that the city's going to finance. If you want us to give you the largesse, whether it's there or not, of the city, it will come with some strings attached. Because I don't know how many other lawsuits you have against the city, but this hopefully is not going to become like the disaster mentality that we've had. Disasters have been good to us financially. And I know that's a hard pill to swallow. And we've become experts in disaster financing and the ability to save ourselves, our capital assets, and improvement upon same because we set aside no money to do so. We hope and pray that a storm comes through and takes our building out because that way we get a new building. I hope we're not backfilling this in the future now with litigation. And looking for altruistic leaders that are willing to put this on the fast track, and that's not meant as a criticism, but we're reaching out, part of that beggar mentality, settle the case in order to save our life. That's not a strategy. Love to see a strategy. And how can we not have an explanation revealed to the public about what this mistake was all about? I said it before and I'll say it again. Shame on you. I'd love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We will be right back. Well, the postmortem on this election continues. Jen Psaki, you remember Jen Psaki, right? The voice of Joe Biden, right? Well, she has her own show now with MSNBC, and she says that Democrats are lost in the wilderness without a clear leader. Someone's got to step up. Someone's got to grab the mantle. Someone has to decide. Nobody's given it, she says. You seize the mantle or you don't. Are you going to be the person who decides who's the right person to stand up against Trump? Or are you going to be the person who brings the country together? Are you going to be the person who talks about the economy and in ways that people understand? There are a lot of ways to do it. I don't know who's going to emerge, but that's the moment we're in right now. She also says that Democrats continue to point fingers and play the blame game in their post-election analysis of why Harris lost, and it continues on and on. A huge misread on how important the abortion issue was to millions of America in the country who ended up voting for Trump and urged her party to be sober about the reality that many voters who traditionally supported Democrats didn't turn out to support Harris on election day. And the battle continues because now they're trying to find someone to lead the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. Our former mayor, Mitch Landrieu, is under consideration with many others. Wisconsin Democratic Party leader Ben Wickler, Minnesota Democratic former Labor Party chair Ken Martin. Mitch Landrieu, the infrastructure czar, former infrastructure czar, and the U.S. ambassador to Japan. Remember Rahm Emanuel from the Obama days? Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland. He is now the director of Social Security. He announced that he's going to resign at the end of this month because he intends to run for the head of the DNC. And it's interesting when they begin to talk to folks that are part of the DNC committee who all spoke and gave statements to Politico with anonymity. Not all, but some. One says the progressive wing of the party has to recognize that what we all have to recognize, the country's not progressive. And not to the far left or the far right. They're in the middle, said Joseph Paolino Jr. from Rhode Island. I'm going to look for a chair who's going to be talking to the center and who's going to be for the guy who drives a truck back home at the end of each day. Another DNC member from Florida said, I don't want to be the freak show party like they have branded us. You know, when you're a mom with three kids and you live in middle America and you're just really not into politics, and you see these ads that scare the bejesus out of you, you're like, I know Trump's weird or whatever, but I would rather his weirdness that doesn't affect my kids. Sound familiar? I've been talking about these issues for over a year now. And Donna Brazile from here in New Orleans, the former Democratic National Committee chair, says this is basically a rebuild job from the bottom up. Others are saying, I do think that this whole sentiment that we just went too far out there on identity and it allowed Republicans to really attack us at every turn as a result, and that we just essentially did not focus on just the everyday issues of Americans, said one DNC member from California, granted anonymity to speak freely. It's really amazing. You have members of the DNC committees and chairs of committees that have to speak on the condition of anonymity because they're afraid that they're going to be canceled if they simply point out the obvious that everyone knows and everyone realizes and everybody's been saying. I don't want a party. I don't want an ideology that's going to stand between me and my kids. That's about as basic as it gets, right? And here we are, weeks after, still arguing about why we lost. And it's interesting, the party that said that they were the party that was not a threat to democracy, they seem to have a short memory. Because now what's going on in Pennsylvania relative to Senator Bob Casey, who has lost his race, his opponent, McCormick, has been declared the winner. Well, they have four counties in Pennsylvania that they are still maintaining that they're going to count defective ballots, where the law in Pennsylvania clearly says a defective ballot is not a valid ballot and should not be counted. As one writer says, the Washington Post slogan warned that democracy dies in darkness. And then when you look at what's going on in Pennsylvania, he says, sometimes folks choose to stab it to death in broad daylight because they are hell-bent in four counties to count these ballots. And what they're saying is really interesting, some of these election officials and how they justify it. The Bucks County Election Commission said it is a pretty stupid thing to not count someone's vote simply because they didn't date an envelope for a ballot. Robert Harvey Jr., the chairman of the board and a Democrat, during a meeting on Tuesday where the board voted 2-1 to count 405 ballots with date errors on the envelope. He added the election officials know when ballots were printed for voters, making the outer envelope date requirement meaningless. He finishes up by saying, the law needs to be changed, but in the interim, we're just going to violate the law. It needs to be changed, in our opinion, and therefore, until it's changed to satisfy what we think is the right way to do this, we will just violate the law. And the Pennsylvania Democrats, they keep saying that they don't care that both the state Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court have explicitly stated they can't do what they're currently doing. In fact, the Bucks County Commissioner, Diane Ellis Marseglia, contends, I think we all know that precedent by a court doesn't matter anymore in this country, and that people violate laws at any time they want. You cannot make this stuff up as to what's actually going on there. And here we are, November the 19th, and we've still not resolved an issue from November the 5th. And we wonder who else is a threat to democracy. We'll be right back. Love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go to Chuck. Chuck, you're up. What say you?
Well, Newell, I know I'm beating a dead horse, but I think I think all the noise we hear about, you know, Democrats, you know, too progressive, Republicans too conservative, you know, over the top crazies, it's all smoke screens to what's really going on in this plutocracy that we live in. And I know you think you're a big capitalist, and I am too, but I mean, capitalism is out of control right now. The top 1% have taken over $50 trillion from the bottom 90%. There is no middle class. The poor keep getting poorer. The top rich keep getting richer. The smoke screens that are there are just hiding this all from us, because that's what's going to threaten democracy, is our economic breakdown, and that's what's going to make this country less secure, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with you, Chuck. I've told you this before, that
Trump is positioning with all of his buddies to crash the stock market. It's already happening. He's doing things, and they're shorting the stock market. They're coming out with these outlandish things that affect a segment of the stock market, and I bet you if we could check his brokerage statement right now, I bet you he's shorting, and all of his cronies are shorting everything to death right now, anticipating, you know, the drug companies getting depressed because Kennedy's going to go there and go wild on the drug situations. And I guarantee you they're making a, and you know what he's getting ready to do, which is going to really make the stock market crash? He's going to try and privatize again Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the big mortgage giants behind all the mortgage loans out there. He's trying to privatize that right now. He tried to do it last time, but he couldn't get it done. He's going to try and do it this time. And if the mortgage companies start losing faith in the backing of all these mortgages that are out there right now, we're in serious trouble. Anyway, I'll let you pick up from there.
No, look, I don't disagree. I mean, I think we need to have a robust debate on a lot of these different issues. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. I'm not all up to snuff on that issue and the downsides to privatizing same.
Ask Guy Williams, you know, when he comes back.
and I will. Actually, I'm just going to write it down because I think it is a meaningful conversation to be had, quite frankly. But yeah, we got to look at all of these issues. I mean, part of the thing is, and you know this as well as I, Chuck, I mean, we find ourselves in the situation we do because we're outsourcing jobs overseas. And we're not manufacturing. We're not manufacturing enough here. We need to manufacture more here. It's the only way that we're going to reinstate, whatever word you want to call it, the middle class. That was the backbone of this country.
I am so tired of picking up the telephone to call somebody, and I get somebody that I cannot understand. It's like I feel like our whole infrastructure, not only just manufacturing, but service sector, information sector, everything is being run by people that, I don't have anything wrong with people who don't speak English, but I just can't understand them. it makes life difficult for me.
Look, I asked an expert this the other day about this with immigration. If you bring people in to do migrant work legally in this country, they guarantee an amount of income for those folks. There's a floor as to what you can pay them, right? And it's a high floor. It's well above the minimum wage, well above it, maybe double what the minimum wage is. But if they hire locals, they're not paying that rate. So what's going on in this country is that they're now hiring the illegals because they know they can pay them a rate less than, because they don't have to document these migrant workers and they don't have to document exactly what they're paying. And there's a lot of folks that don't want to do E-Verify. I mean, they've got so many different mixed messages. But in the end, what this is all about is us. We're the ones that are paying the price. We're the ones that are losing the jobs. We have a desire to not pay European prices for a head of lettuce. But what we've lost sight of is that desire has eliminated our ability to rebuild the middle class. And if we continue to do this over and over in all sectors of the economy like we're doing right now, that's why we're in a predicament that we can't figure out how to get out of. But one thing for sure, we better start manufacturing more stuff here. And how we do protectionism, tariffs or otherwise in the short term. We have to be very careful about that. But it's the only way we're going to raise our standard of living here. Plain and simple. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Leroy Brown of Opportunity Hub.